Welcome right here to the spotlight, where we make the beat right, and we can't fight. So leave your drugs and you go home. Yo, my boy Nino in the house. Yo, Nino,
yo,
what's up, G?
Yeah.
Yeah. DJ Clark Kent, boy.
You know, a drug dealer is the worst kind of brother, man.
Yeah.
He won't sell it to his sister, he won't sell it to his mother, but he'll sell it to one of his boys on the street.
Hustler, word, I pull the trigger long.
I need some new jack cops to take down a new jack gangster.
I don't know about you, but I'm ready to kill Nino Brown. Are you with me?
I'm ahead of you.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus movie review of New Jack City.
Because you gotta rob to get rich in the Reagan era.
Hosted by Stewart.
My brother, it's always business. Never person.
Jacob.
Relax, you'll be great. A number one, you're the best man for this job. You're a fucking genius.
And Arnie.
Now what would make a high-class guy like you keep a good computer programming job at the bank to work among a den of thieves, huh?
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
If you just say no, what are you going to say yes to?
Listener discretion is advised.
Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
H-U-S-T-L-E-R, hustler.
Yo, man, you know what I'm saying? You got it going on, my man. I like how it's going down. You got the fly claw. The girl's the jewel. Look at that ring right there. I know it's real. It's got to be real. Man, you the flyest nigga I've seen in my life. Yo, man, I just want to roll with you, man. How can I be damned?
What's up? Today we're talking about New Jack City, starring Wesley Snipes, Ice-T, Chris Rock, Mario Van Peebles, and Judd Nelson. Directed by Mario Van Peebles. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, and I'm a New Jack podcaster for a New Jack podcast talking about a New Jack City.
And this is Stuart, and I am my brother's keeper.
That is true. You are.
Sit your $5 ass down before I make change and get ready to listen. This is your host, Jacob.
So quotable, this movie.
Yes.
Thank you, Wesley Snipes.
You're now about to witness the strength of podcasting. So many lines.
Yes, indeed. And thank you, August patrons. Why are we covering a 27-year-old hood film?
I really, really want to know this, Stuart. You insisted. We talked about, we had a patron in the wings wanting to do Vanilla Sky. You're like, no, New Jack. I'm like, why?
It's not obvious.
No.
Because this is a Scarface remake?
Yeah, there's scenes from Scarface in the movie. I can tell you specifically why I've wanted to do this movie. It's been about 5 years. 5 years ago, I went to New York and took a hip-hop tour, which is exactly what it sounds like. You get on a bus, they really blast New York State of Mind by Jay-Z, really at ear-deafening volume, and they have hip-hop stars, Moni Love and one of the Sugar Hill Gang, pop on the bus, and they tell you what they can about the history of rap as it's related to the boroughs. I did Harlem and the Bronx, and a big part of that tour, they were like, and here's the housing complex that I know you know from Nino Brown.
You got to see the Carter Apartments?
Yes. Nobody on the bus knew what it was. I was the only one on a hip-hop tour that had ever heard of New Jack City.
Wow.
And I was like, that's outrageous. People need to know.
This is my first time viewing it, but, you know, I've seen Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society, and I felt like, oh, this is one of those kind of films that I just never got around to. But I figure, yeah, lots of people have seen this because it's one of those big 90s gangsters films, right?
I saw it back in the day as soon as it was new on video. Why? Judd Nelson.
Of course, that's the draw for you.
From the Hip.
Yes, I had seen From the Hip not long before, and I was
if it's not John Leguizamo, it's Judd Nelson.
I was like, this looks like a crime film with Judd Nelson. I'd be interested in that. It's Judd Nelson giving his best Tom Sizemore performance.
God, yeah. It's a first. I don't think we've ever covered him before.
Why would we? Unless we're doing The Breakfast Club, why would we discuss Judd Nelson?
I don't know. We had to for the book.
That's true. No, Transformers the movie. He was Rodimus Prime.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the cartoon.
Yes.
I'm like, what was Rodimus Prime in those Michael Bay films? Okay, that's the cartoon. Wow.
Yes, Transformers the movie from 1986. And yes, this is coming out about 5 years after that, at the turn of the 1990s, and was huge. Again, it kills me to know that some 27 years later, actually, at the time I was on the bus tour, it was 20 years later, the movie seemed lost to time, but there's no doubt about it, this movie was a landmark. It opened the doors wide open for black cinema and black actors in Hollywood. Before this time, unless your name was Eddie Murphy, I don't think they were going to greenlight a movie with black actors in it.
Do the Right Thing was 2 years earlier.
Yes, Spike Lee kicked the ball and started that going. I would still call him an independent filmmaker. And I would still say that, yes, Do the Right Thing made $23, $24 million. This movie did twice that, sold a whole lot of soundtracks, was the first time a rapper ever starred in a film. That was unheard of.
Is this Ice-T's first film?
Well, I mean, he popped up in Colors. And I mean, rappers have appeared in movies throughout the 80s, but nobody was willing to legitimize them by saying you can be an actor now. And I mean, everyone, I just want to point out, in 1991, everyone was waiting for hip hop to blow over. It was considered a fad that was going to go away in a couple years, like disco. And yeah, I just think that it is very rare to have so many black actors featured in a movie.
At that time, we should say. I mean, I think it happens more today, but yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Not a big thing then.
And when they would tell black stories before then, they always had to have it like white character helps the black people. Matthew Broderick is going to help the black people in the Civil War of Glory. I mean, Cry Freedom, you got Stephen Biko in there, but it's somehow about Kevin Kline. They were always marginalized in their own tale. Here we have a black story written partially by a black man, directed by a black man, starring black actors, a revolutionary thing at the time, and opened the floodgates the same year as Boys in the Hood, a few years, yes, after Do the Right Thing, but the same year as Jungle Fever. Black cinema really came into its own in 1991. And New Jack City, I think, was the biggest. This one was huge.
Well, Boys in the Hood made almost $60 million. I mean, it was the big one. It's the one that got the Oscar nominations, but you're right. In 91, I was more interested in New Jack City, more for the soundtrack. Long before I saw the film, I owned the soundtrack, and I had this rule, and I kind of still do, but someday I need to see Above the Rim is all I'm going to say about this rule. But if I owned a soundtrack, I needed to see the movie.
Okay.
I mean, I would just seek out movies that had good soundtracks so I could understand the use. And this one, yeah, New Jack Hustler, I Wanna Sex You Up. This was a CD that got a lot of play in my high school senior year.
I'm not into Coloring Bad, but I will say I have this affection of 90s hip-hop and just, like, the simple beat, none of that mumblecore stuff that you get nowadays with the rappers. Like, yeah, watching this, it was like turning on an old episode of Yo! MTV Raps, which I always liked as a kid watching.
Oh, me too. I absolutely loved it with the East Coast Dr. Dre and Ed Lover.
Yeah.
Really? See, I'll fully admit, I was pretty in a white bread neighborhood and, yeah, didn't go see this in movie theaters because I was like, I don't know. There was a lot of hype about, yeah, movies like this, people get shot, there's gang violence, yeah.
Yeah, same reason I could never go see these quote-unquote black movies because my parents were like, no, there's going to be gang violence at them.
Yeah, it certainly became a part of the promotion of the film. And I hate to say that, but it almost was a selling point. But this still sold $50 million at the box office. It crossed over. It did well. And yes, when it came out on video, I saw it, and I saw it many, many times on cable. Hadn't seen it in a long time. And I'm glad that we have an opportunity now, particularly since we're covering gangster films and specifically Scarface. I think that, yeah, there's a lot of compare and contrast. We can actually see being documented what we were talking about, how the hip-hop community embraced that Al Pacino movie that didn't make a lot of money when it came out, but 8-9 years later had been remade.
I wondered if this movie was the reason for Carlito's Way. We discussed that a few days ago for Donors. Given that that was a reunion of Scarface that came out a couple years after this one, I'm wondering if this movie helped popularize Scarface among the hip hop crowd. The fact that Wesley Snipes loves that movie so much here and that gangster kids would look up to Nino in this film, maybe they actually decided to be the hipster gangsters who like Scarface instead of New Jack City.
I do think there's some Godfather here, too. I think there's a lot of what we've been watching all summer long. It's also heavily influenced by Melvin Van Peebles. Directing this film is Mario Van Peebles. We know him. He is, unfortunately, the Jamaican sidekick in Jaws the Revenge.
Yes.
And, you know, at the time was being billed as sort of a cuddly TV star. He had a TV detective show, Sonny Spoon, I think was his claim to fame. But Mario is part of black filmmaking royalty. His dad wrote and directed and made some of the earliest films about racial strife from the 1960s told from a black filmmaker's perspective. Watermelon Man, Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. These were, I think, have been forgotten. Maybe like New Jack City has to today's kids, maybe not known, but they definitely were hugely successful and influential independent films that helped create blaxploitation. And yes, we know Melvin, unfortunately, mostly for being in that horrid Shining remake, but he is a leading legend in black cinema. And this, I do think, is his son trying to take that mantle and make, yes, an entertaining movie, but also carry on the social progressive ideas that his father always wanted to include in his film.
Well, I did notice Fab Five Freddy was one of the associate producers. I think, much like we discussed with The Last Dragon, music production was a driving force in this film as well.
Indeed, yes. The soundtrack certainly helped the crossover appeal. I can't say that I knew who Ice-T was in 1991, but when I heard the songs, yeah, it made me more inclined to want to see him act.
I knew Ice-T. I didn't know Ice Cube. That's about how deep I was. I was into Public Enemy.
You're not an N.W.A. fan?
Yeah, N.W.A. took me a couple more years to get to. Flava Flav was more my suburban white boy speed.
Yeah.
9-1-1 is a joke, yeah.
I do have to ask, though. Stuart, you've used this term a couple of times on the podcast. What does New Jack mean? I mean, I get it here. This is New York City. It's the 90s, so it's New Jack City. But what is New Jack?
Yeah, what is New Jack? I got a couple different answers to that. Behind the scenes material, a lot of times the people were like, a New Jack is a novice, someone that is new on the scene, and it's kind of implied they don't know what they're doing yet. Like, don't be a New Jack with the drug trade because you're going to end up dead. It's a stretch, but that was kind of what they were trying to sell. Now, New Jack Swing was the sound of R&B at that time. Teddy Riley and all the stuff that he was producing, Guy Lavert, all of that stuff. It was a term coined in music. I also think that just jacking someone and a new jack, in terms of this story, it's a new way to steal. We're going to watch people come up with a new way to sell you illegal drugs. So they're kind of jacking you in a new way. Of course, this is all old school now, but Arnie, why don't you give them a plot and we can find out what was so new jack back in 1991.
Yes, and for those who didn't hear our review of Carlito's Way, I'm disappointed to say I will not be wrapping this plot summary or my recommendation, because I already did New Jack Hustler for Leprechaun in the Hood, and I just can't croon like I want to sex you up for a plot summary. The movie opens in 1986 New York City, and we meet ambitious drug dealer Nino Brown, portrayed by Wesley Snipes. His best friend G-Money, played by Alan Payne, is second in command and introduces Nino to their newest moneymaker, crack cocaine. Nino has a plan to run out the other dealers and take over the Carter apartment complex, making the residents his crackhead customers and manufacturing the product right on the premises. We jump a few years later and Nino has become rich, arrogant, and powerful. He even stops paying his 10% to the Italian mobsters that allowed him to operate. The police want to bring Nino down, and so assigned to the case is Detective Scotty Appleton, played by Ice-T, and his new jack partner, Italian Nick Peretti, played by Judd Nelson. Scotty tries to get a man on the inside, and for this he chooses Pookie, played by Chris Rock. Pookie was once a dealer for Nino, but became a crackhead. Scotty helps Pookie get through rehab, and Pookie wears a wire to go undercover in Nino's operation.
I want that exercise video so bad of Pookie doing jumping jacks.
But Pookie can't resist the lure of the crack all around him. Who could, really? So he starts smoking up again and is revealed as an informant. So Nino has Pookie killed. They're gonna kill me, Scotty! And since G-Money is the one who brought Pookie in, tensions are growing between G-Money and Nino. Tensions escalated when Nino starts sleeping with G's girlfriend, Uniqua. What a Uniqua name that is. With Pookie gone, Scotty and Nick go undercover as drug dealers to get Nino, and Scotty and Nino end up close friends. Scotty sets up a deal to bring down the drug lord, but at the last minute, one of Nino's gang members recognizes Scotty as a cop. A shootout ensues, killing most of Nino's gang members, and Scotty wants to put the final bullet in Nino, but ends up arresting him instead. On trial, Nino starts offering evidence and is only sentenced to 1 year in jail. But before he can leave the courthouse, Nino is shot dead by an old man who's upset by the corruption Nino brought to the neighborhood. Nino dies, and we're given a PSA that drugs are bad in text as credits roll.
I think this whole thing is a PSA for drugs are bad, but it's also a PSA to remind you that Wesley Snipes once was a big old star. You can tell me Demolition Man, White Men Can't Jump, Blade all you want. When you say Wesley Snipes, this is the movie I think about because he completely takes it away from the cops. This is supposed to be a movie about cops busting a drug kingpin, but who isn't looking at Wesley in this film? Starting right here from the beginning.
Yeah, that is the big surprise, because this opening with Wesley Snipes hanging this guy from the bridge because he took his coke and he took his money, and then you're going to spend all this time with the cops. I'm like, no, just focus on Wesley. He is so engaging. Like, every moment he's on screen, I love it.
I agree completely. I think he makes this movie for what it is, but that's why I didn't see this as a Scarface remake. Obviously, I see Scarface in this film and I see the parallels, but this movie focuses so much more on the cops, and that's what Scarface never did. Scarface reveled in its own debauchery of drugs. Here, drugs are bad.
Well, I think that if you look at Thomas Lee Wright, I didn't go back and read his original script. It was rewritten by Barry Michael Cooper. But if you look at the scripts he had written before then, he had written cop scripts. Probably originally this was shaped, the thinking was audiences are more inclined to want to watch a story of cops bringing down the bad guy, circa Miami Vice, than they would ever want to see, oh, a loathsome crack dealer. That's not someone we can admire. But it is to the credit of Wesley Snipes that he just single-handedly steals this movie. See ya, and I would want to be ya. Maybe not in that blue tracksuit, but he is so awesome in this film that you forget how entertaining. It's been a long while since I've seen Wesley Snipes be this charismatic.
Well, I mean, it's just his time. I was thinking about Wesley when watching this and about the stories on Blade 3 that Ryan Reynolds is still telling about, yeah, I don't know what it's like to work with Wesley. He never came on set. That was always his stand-in when I was there. Wesley came in for his close-ups and left again. But before those days, yeah, I mean, he's coming off of Major League, where he was exceedingly charismatic, absolutely vital to that movie, came out of nowhere to do it. He had also done a movie I saw that I kind of got confused with this before I rewatched it, King of New York.
Yeah, Abel Ferreira, yep.
So he really, at a point, and yes, White Man Can't Jump and Passenger 57 and Demolition Man, he could hold the screen.
I think this is the movie that proves that. This is showboating. This is, again, dangling a guy off a bridge, and yeah, you miss him every time he's not on the screen here, because he'll go away pretty quick, and we'll be spending a lot of time with the star of the movie, the director, Mario Van Peebles. I don't know what's going on with Mario Van Peebles. You're directing the movie. You would think you would give yourself all the best lines, all the close-ups, and for whatever reason, I'm grateful for it, but he knew where the movie lied. Maybe it was the editor, but they just said, you know what? We need to shape this so that it's more Scarface than Miami Vice.
And in these early scenes, we're really focusing on the 80s. I didn't remember much about this movie coming in, and the way it's set up, it has this voiceover that's radio announcers talking over each other or news announcers talking about, oh my God, the country has a $221 billion deficit. Whatever are we going to do? Yeah, we had $665 billion last year, so we wish we had a $221 billion deficit. But I thought this might be a period piece in the 80s. The opening shot shows us the island of Manhattan. There's the Twin Towers looming large. Of course, they would back in the 90s, but you see that, you think of capitalism, and you think of the big 80s when this comes out. So to see this and to see, yeah, this is going to be the time crack comes on the scene versus the old days of heroin and cocaine.
I also think it's just a great portrayal of New York. It's just it great on location, these big wide shots, like you said, of the World Trade Center. And that's just something you associate, you know, the projects and inner gangs in these big cities. So yeah, the 80s, the crack epidemic, Just Say No, Nancy Reagan, all that.
And it's not Nino Brown that comes up with the idea of the cell-free base. He is perfectly content with selling the powder. You know, cocaine seemed like it was it. It is his childhood friend, his brother from another mother, G Money, that really has the idea.
And this is where I'm really thinking throughout this film, Scarface remake, like we had Tony and that other character who was dating his sister at the end, like we'll see him turn on him. They hit some of those similar character types and beats.
Oh, for sure. And I was thinking of Michael and Fredo Corleone. I do think in both cases, they are mining Al Pacino gangster films for their material, for the spine, for the structure. What makes it feel unique and different is that, yeah, drugs. We saw in the Godfather film, the mob didn't go near illicit drugs like that kind of stuff. That wasn't their game. This seems like an extra edgy step to ask us to relate to cocaine dealers and to show us a world that a lot of people outside of inner cities had no knowledge of. Crack houses, all of that stuff. I mean, you might have listened to some of the rap music, but I don't know that you would have any association with what was really going on in the inner city.
No, I didn't know anyone that was doing crack. In my understanding, unless I missed something in this film, none of the higher-ups, Nino, they don't do the drugs. They stay clean. They just, this is their empire, and they don't get messed with it except for to sell it.
Don't get high on your own supply. That's what Scarface said.
It's what Dutta Man tries to say here. We got the stutterer, Bill Nunn, who's their driver, and he kind of gives that warning. One of them does fall prey to it. It is G Money. Ultimately, for reasons we don't even know why, shot behind a fish tank for some bizarre reason because it's colorful. We'll see him marrying a crack pipe. It's a very strange, you may kiss the bride, bubble, bubble, bubble. But yeah, I wondered if they wouldn't have the fall be that Nino Brown gets addicted to what he is selling, but he thinks he's smarter than Tony Montana. He thinks he's watched Scarface enough times that he knows that if he stays away from cocaine, that his empire will never fall. That if to watch Scarface, the only reason why he was undone was because he did that mound of cocaine at the end.
Despite all that, though, I don't think we are ever meant to even briefly feel these are good people. These are not morally complex, conflicted people. These are capital V villains. They're going to chew up the scenery and they're going to chew up the town. I mean, I think Wesley might be looking a little bit at Jack Nicholson a couple years earlier with his Joker, the way he's just so big in this movie. This movie feels very after-school special in a lot of ways, in that the drugs are going to be so vilified.
I know you keep bringing that up, and yeah, I agree. There's a weird sincerity about it, though, so it doesn't bug me too much. Like,
the sincerity bugs me more. The fact that they really think this message means something.
No, we talked about the Disco Godfather, and I feel like because what's going to happen in this film, like, again, Menace to Society, Boys in the Hood, I felt those were grounded in reality. Even Do the Right Thing, I mean, that's a stylized version of reality, but it's grounded in reality. Once Nino decides to become a crack dealer and takes over an apartment complex, and they're gonna have those banker tubes going all over it, and like, I feel like computers are a new thing. Let's have computers in this. It almost goes weird sci-fi, like you're gonna have your own ID card to get scanned in to get into this crack house. That's what I'm talking about, this weird sincerity. They're like doing almost this blaxploitation type film, but it's like, guys, just like Disco Godfather, crack is bad, even though we're going to tell this crazy story based on it.
Yeah, we're not that far removed from the epidemic itself. 1991, commenting on the Reagan era, I mean, George Bush was in office. And I do think that this movie is trying to score political points, underline some things that had happened in this country that had led to a monster like Nino Brown. Is he completely reprehensible? I think theoretically he is. I think Wesley Snipes, the way that he plays him, is very compelling. And I think that the 80s as a decade, if you just look at all the people we celebrated, they were capitalists. They were people that saw an opportunity and had an idea that really, like, you know what we could do? Instead of selling on street corners, we'll just take over this housing complex and put the drug lab at the center of it. He's a Bond villain. I get that it's silly. It is blaxploitation. They are continuing that 70s tradition of being campy. But I do think there is sincerity in what they're selling with this camp.
When Nino says the line, you gotta rob to get rich in the Reagan era, that's a corny line, but it's Wesley Snipes saying it, so I love it, and it's also kind of true.
See, what you keep calling the sincerity, I call sappy.
It's hard to be sappy when you have your sci-fi apartment drug lab complex and drugs are bad. You gotta be sincere to be able to pull off this Carter apartment scenario.
Sappy to me means they're asking me to feel moved or dramatic. I think we're very much encouraged to laugh. I think this movie, certainly now that it's a period piece and we can see that times have changed in style of dress and music and what have you, that's funny in of itself. But I also just think that, yeah, it's a very silly, uninformed idea about how a drug dealer operates. I mean, he gives them credit cards and barcodes them through doors.
Yes.
I mean, again, Bond villain. It's outrageous. I don't think it's trying to show it as it really is. Unlike some of the Hood films of the time, Jacob's right to point out saying they really wanted to show you what was going on in the streets. This is a fantastical vision of what's going on the streets. A satire, I think, would maybe the closest I can to compare what they're doing here. It's funny, but it's also pointed in its laughs. It's trying to get at something. And something that gets lost, but I caught this time, was that Nino has a bookish girlfriend who is always in a nice suit and who will bring in her cousin, who is a Wall Street banker that's decided that he can make $8,000 a week working for Nino instead of $800 a week down at the stock market.
He must be bad at trading.
Well,
I thought those stock market guys made more.
No, but he's IT. He's like a programmer.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know whether that's what he was starting out as. He's in a suit. I think we're asked to say that this is a yuppie that decided you can do better in America by going with drug dealers if you're black.
But they do specifically say you leave a computer job to hang out among thieves. Whatever he's doing, and it's going to become really important at the end, but it's ill-defined, hand-wavy. Computers are the central problem, not crack.
Yes. It's all about floppy yes. disks. I do love that. It's terrific. Again, there's a lot to laugh about here. And the further we get away from that time period, the funnier it becomes. But yeah, that they are a part of this. I had completely forgotten that Nino has a false sense of superiority. His only contribution here, the only idea that he had, was that instead of trying to go out in the city, make the city come to us. If we can just occupy this one fortress and put out a product that is so addictive, eventually all of New York will come knocking. We won't have to go out there and risk getting busted. I can remain protected. And in fact, Nino Brown is never seen selling drugs. He doesn't have to be. He's an upstanding member of the community when we jump later, handing out turkeys at Christmas time. But he does have to do one killing here. They do have to get the Carter housing complex, and that means getting rid of Fat Smitty and Rasta Man.
Rasta Man, I thought, was really cool. They kept talking about Fat Smitty, but then what we see is Rasta Man getting accosted. I was like, that guy's thin. Is he ironically called Fat Smitty? But no.
No, we get to see all of Fat Smitty.
Yes. And my favorite character. I got to say, there's I mean, Wesley Snipes is probably my favorite character. But the one that I hold on to, Rockabye Baby. So good. They got to say it twice. That is not the Vanessa Williams that was Miss America.
Oh, I know. Yes.
That is a Vanessa A. Williams, different actress. She was on Soul Food, the TV show, is I think her claim to fame beyond this. But I love Keisha.
I know her from Candyman. She was like the second build in Candyman.
Yes.
And I just rewatched that when we were doing all the Barker stuff.
Okay, yeah, she's in that as well. But real fun supporting henchmen. It helps that the people around Nino are just as colorful as he is. And yeah, she puts Rasta Man to sleep and they become the Cash Money Brothers. They actually franchise. Everyone is wearing t-shirts and baseball hats advertising they're a part of the crack gang.
CMB, that actually sounds like an investment firm. For your retirement, CMB is there.
Yeah, I think this is satirical. If you look at something like the Michael J. Fox movie, Secret of My Success, and see the silly way in which we're asked to cheer for someone excelling in the capitalistic world, this plays as like the Dark Mirror parody of that. And that's how I'm appreciating it. I recognize it's outrageous. If you're looking for realism,
this is not the film for you.
Yeah. I mean, if you're annoyed by the heavy handed of the messages and news reports of that, I don't think you should be. I mean, I think that they're just slipping stuff in there to let you know that they mean what they say, even though they know they're entertaining you and making you laugh.
I'm more interested at this point in the cops. I know Wesley is a great performer in this, but his story feels been there, done that. I'm interested because we see Ice-T undercover with a bag full of money going up to Chris Rock. Yes, Chris Saturday Night Live Rock is here in a dramatic role.
He's a baby in this. He is so young.
Yeah, he was on SNL at this point. He had started a year earlier. And when you go back and see some of those early SNL ones, man, he's a baby. He is just so young. And he had been acting for a while. I actually do remember going back and seeing him in Beverly Hills Cop 2 and being like, oh my God, that's Chris Rock in that movie. But he's a really like, it would be called a cameo now. It was a job then.
I don't say he's been acting. This is his first major anything. This is the first exposure he's really getting other than walk-ons.
And he sees it on SNL.
Yeah, and I think he wasn't heavily featured in that. I mean, he's really green, as you say. He is not one of their leading stars at that time. Eyes would be on Ice-T. Same year, he's out there performing at Lollapalooza, Cop Killer.
Yeah, he's with Body Count at this point.
I do not think audience at the time would presume, if they didn't know anything going into this movie, that Ice-T is an undercover cop about to bust Pookie for selling him dope.
Cop Killer was still a year away, so it hadn't hit that hard yet. I specifically remember where I was when I bought Cop Killer when it was a new release. But still, Ice-T is not somebody who comes off as a cop. He comes off very street. And so in a movie, you would usually not play that as a officer of the law.
Nowadays, I do associate him with a cop because he's played one for so long on television. But when I was watching this, I mean, again, he's very young in this. Everyone's young because this is a 27-year-old movie. But even when he says, I'm an undercover cop, I'm like, is he lying to get away with shooting Chris Rock? This is all a ploy, right? No, he is going to end up being a cop. But because I knew of his reputation before he really became an actor just as a rapper, I'm like, ah, he could still be a gangster.
I love the chase, though, when Pookie steals the money and gets on a bicycle and Ice-T's giving chase on foot and New Jack Hustler is playing. I think they break out that song a little too early. It should be like, you guys know the movie Pretty Woman, how they tease that Roy Orbison song before they actually bring in the full chorus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they should have teased New Jack Hustler a little bit and brought it up later on during a Wesley Snipes montage. But no, we get it here in the chase.
Well, I think the real theme here is For the Love of Money by the OJs. They'll rework and remix that throughout. That's really the messaging that's going on. This is just like Ice-T doing his own theme song. Like every time he's got to run, they're going to kick into this. And what great fun. I wish I had a theme song every time I ran. That would make me so happy here. What they have done in order to sell the idea that Cop Killer is a cop is that he is not respected in this force, that he is considered dangerous and rogue. And when we jump forward in time, 3 years. Nobody wants to work with him. And I think he's haunted about what he has to do here on the playground. I think that he remembers when he sees Pookie later, that's the kid I shot, which implies he doesn't go around shooting that many citizens. This is something that stuck with him. And it's also something that stuck with Kareem, because Kareem is very conveniently at this playground when he finally catches up with Pookie and puts a bullet in his ankle and arrests him.
We do jump a few years later, which was, again, I thought we might have an entire period piece in the 80s, and I wouldn't have minded that.
These are the years of crack. And it has been very, very good to Nino Brown. He is now going around chanting, the world is mine.
Yeah, he's watching Scarface.
Yes, exactly. And as I pointed out, to anyone else on the street, I mean, everyone is apparently addicted to his product, or they're just, he compares them to hostages in a Beirut-style situation in this housing complex. He is a public figure that is seen as a benevolent neighborhood charity giver and mostly parties at a nightclub called Spotlight with Flavor Flav and Fat Five Freddy and Guy.
Yeah, Chuck D, he didn't get an invite. It's just Flavor Flav.
I really thought that Public Enemy was the house band here, because every time they go to that club, there's Flava Flav.
Yeah, but I mean, how exciting to see these. I mean, it's not the first time they've had cameos from the hip hop world, Crush Groove, Break and what have you, but it does authenticate. I mean, I think this movie wouldn't have the charm that it did if it faked the rappers, if it couldn't get the real people.
It has a charm to me because, again, when I think about when I was really into hip-hop and rap, it was the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. So, yeah, this is taking me back to a good time, like when I was really into this stuff. And, yeah, I love that 911 is a joke video that was mostly Flavor Flav. So, yes, seeing all these characters, seeing Flavor Flav, the music, I'm going back to a time that where I really got into this scene.
When you're doing messaging, it's easier to get people with humor than it is to come off preachy. That's why people love Flavor Flav. Chuck D was the serious one.
Like, yes.
He was the one that really laid it down and it was stark. But Flavor Flav was like a clown. You know, he could make you laugh and he does make me laugh here. I wish he was an actor in this. It would have been fun to follow him. But no, we're going to stay focused on Nino giving a toast for New Year's Eve. I guess it's turning into 1990. He is toasting his brother. Am I my brother's keeper? They keep repeating this. When I saw this movie, I had no idea this was a biblical quote. Did you guys
know? You didn't know this was from the Bible? This is like a famous part of the Bible, Cain and Abel.
I was pretty bad at my Bible studies classes. And while I could figure out that ultimately, yes, there was a Eve temptress and that they were,
yes,
they have Corinthians, I think, spray painted on a wall somewhere. They are clearly working in biblical quotations.
Yeah, they're working in that there's going to be a brother killing another brother.
Yes. Yeah. I think I knew that he was Cain and think he gets called Cain. It helped. You know, I wasn't very savvy. But yes, I did not know why they kept insisting, am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am. But indeed, yes, they want everyone in the audience to get that they are working in a biblical Cain and Abel storyline here.
They say that damn line so often. I thought they were brothers. Yeah. I really did think they were literal brothers. And then later I'm like confused.
No, they're brothers.
Yes. Brothers from another mother. It almost plays like a punchline that, you know, they're sitting there saying, nothing could ever come between us. Cut. Here's Unica, you know, the woman in She's Gotta Have It who gets the men to have a three-way. I mean, obviously we know she's going to come between the guys that say nothing can come between us. And quickly they go back to the crib for some Scarface and Color Me Bad.
And Nino is just really mean to, is it his wife or his girlfriend, pulling lines straight out of Scarface, doing the Tony Montana accent to be like, you can't have no babies because she is barren, much like Michelle Pfeiffer was in the film.
I'm telling you, this is a remake.
Yeah, different emphasis, though. She's not getting high on cocaine, which was always the subtext of Scarface, was that maybe Michelle Pfeiffer was having problems because of her heavy drug use. And here, it's more like she is just getting incredibly jealous. They're setting her up as to be eventually a betrayer, because how can you stand watching, yeah, your partner become so conceited and toss you away in such a flagrantly public manner? I mean, she can see what's happening here. He is picking a new woman, and a woman that has already been earmarked by G-Money, his friend.
Yeah, and I thought it was a little bit tacky that G-Money and Uniqua were basically dry humping on the sofa with Nino and his girl there. But then, yeah, when Uniqua starts eye-fucking Wesley while doing that little striptease, it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's gotta hurt, and we know that they're planting seeds for what's going to happen later. I'm looking for Selena to be the one to maybe even get the floppy disk that becomes so important to our heroes here. They have a subplot that I had forgotten, and I'm not sure they get the most out of it. Anyone watching a gangster movie in 1991 would expect Italians. So we do have this Don Armateo and Freddie Knuckles, his goon that he sends periodically to go over there and present a gift like a horse head that's really a jockey with a noose in it. But I'm not sure that we ever really understand much beyond we have a turf war. I think they had the control over the cocaine market and don't appreciate that crack cocaine has supplanted their business.
And Nino is supposed to be paying them a 10%, I guess, finder's fee or something. Again, because we just watched Scarface recently. recently. I'm like, okay, this is the Colombians that Tony's going to screw over later in the film. These Italians are going to come back to get Nino.
I missed that one, but you're right. That is probably where they got this.
Yeah, they are going to have a very good use later on. Nino needs to have more than just the cops coming after him. They're an omnipresent threat, but they're not set up very well. I mean, let's keep in mind, this movie is about 90 minutes long, which, given that we've been watching so many Pacino films, none of which seem to clock in under 2 hours, this feels really short. So there's not a lot of time to give to the Italians when this movie is trying to be Scarface, but it's also trying to be Lethal Weapon, because you've got the black cop who nobody's going to work with, who's basically, I guess, your Murtaugh. And then they're going to bring in the white guy who nobody else will work
with. Yeah, Scotty's still got that shooting of Chris Rock, I guess, hanging over him. And what's weird is they're going to spend a lot of time with these cops, like, ooh, we got this special task force. I feel like they just sit around in some shady apartment most of this film, not doing much.
The star of the movie is the guy that brings them together. Mario Van Peebles is the star, like, handsome TV star, had been in movies and would have been, in any other world, the focal point. He looks like every time he walks in the scene, he's looking off at the distance at where they're putting the lights. Like, he's like not giving anyone eye contact. And he's like, yeah, I need a New Jack Cops to get a New Jack Gangsta. That's it, right? Okay, I'm out. You know, like, he just can't wait to get off the screen. They could almost cut him. Honestly, they could just have this police commissioner Price guy be the one that bring these cops together, and you could cut the star of the film out of this movie.
Well, I don't consider him the star of the film. He's, you know, not even fourth billed. And I think it's wise for a early director to focus on directing and not try to be like, I'm going to act and direct myself all at once.
Did you see Posse or any of his other films, Solo?
I have. Both of those, in fact. Solo's terrible. Oh my God. Solo is, it's worse than Solo the Star Wars Story.
Yeah, I feel like you could get rid of Mario Van Peebles. You could even get rid of Nick, Judd Nelson. Like, I don't know what his character, just make it about Scotty trying to bust this. And I mean, you do get, I think, the best as in Brown Arrow part of the story when Scotty teams back up with Pookie and gets him clean.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the honest truth. There's a wide audience like me. I mean, I'm going to put myself in.
Oh, I know why Judd Nelson's in this. I know that.
I needed to know that people that like The Breakfast Club get the green light to come in for something like this, that there is something safe here. And Judd Nelson, God bless him, had been trying for several years to change his image from that Brat Packer. He had played a serial killer in a William Lustig movie called Relentless.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, he had on TV, there was a, that was back when TV movies were a thing. It was highly watched. Billionaire Boys Club.
Loved that. Wanted to be one of them.
Yeah, exactly. I think he was trying to go from being lovable teen to sociopathic Patrick Bates, American Psycho. Like, he really did want to have an edge. So here he is trying to be a motorcycle riding, John Lennon glasses wearing, of the street figure. I mean, the biggest scream of the movie for me is later when he tries to say that he was a poor white trash Pookie, that he can relate
right.
to what Chris Rock is going to go through in the middle of this film.
But at this point, Judd Nelson was way past his prime. The Brat Pack had fallen into pieces. It was 6 years after Dane Elmo's Fire, which was really his last hurrah. I mean, Billionaire's Boys Club, yeah, it was a TV miniseries, so it wasn't going to be that great. And then you talk about some of this other stuff about, yeah, Relentless and From the Hip. I like From the Hip. It's underrated, but it was not rated highly. So he was needing a new Jack career turn, and it didn't work out for him. I just remember when I turned on Suddenly Susan and I was like, you've come to this?
Oh, he did go work again. I thought it was the Billy Zane thing of like, sometimes when you're this bad in a popular movie, instead of getting a bump out of it, it like totally, I never saw him again. I didn't know he worked.
Yeah, he was in the movie Airheads. I remember seeing him there as the record executive.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Never saw it.
He did 3 years on Suddenly Susan. I mean, that was just a shit show all around with Brooke Shields in the lead. So when you're wishing you were as good as Veronica's Closet, you're fucked.
Right. But But this movie is trying to do something with Italian and black culture. It's taking the mob movie away from the Italians and while still lovingly acknowledge what was done in earlier films and giving it a new spin and Afrocentric messaging and looking at what was happening with inner city black communities. So it makes sense that they would want to pair an Italian with a black guy who Ice-T comes in wearing Africa medallions. An oil painting of Malcolm X is on his bookcase. Yeah, they really would like to see this, the pitting of two cultures that aren't supposed to get along that will ultimately bond.
But as I said, this is Lethal Weapon. This should be the opposite cops who have to bump heads and then learn to work together.
They are.
Barely. I mean, really, Judd Nelson falls in the background. The partnership is Scotty and Pookie, as Jacob said, because Pookie, we saw him in the beginning, and man, in 3 years, his teeth went to hell.
I never want to do crack because I do not want those teeth. I wanted to take a toothbrush to my screen. I felt bad for Chris Rock having to have those teeth. Oh, it was awful.
And yet it's still better than meth mouth, but it's awful. And he's there. Yeah, you say Nino is handing out the turkeys and Chris Rock comes in. He's trying to take all the turkeys and going back with his crackhead girlfriend, eating some turkey and smoking some rock. And yeah, he runs into Scotty, and Scotty has that guilt complex of, am I my brother's keeper? Scotty is going to become Pookie's keeper.
Yeah, should we be laughing? I feel bad. Let me put it this way. We are, of course, going to be laughing. It is Chris Rock. He is a very funny comedian. He's riffing. He might be on crack, but he is still on point, calling her the prom fiend of Martin Luther King High School. I am laughing every time I see him, but if these are serious issues, I feel a little guilty about laughing about something outside my experience that's kind of been turned into a joke.
Yeah, if feels like it's supposed to be super sincere, but it's so sincere. Jogging with Ice-T. I want to work out with Ice-T. I need to get in shape. I need to get in contact with this guy. He can get me back to the physical level I need to be. Jumping jacks, all of that.
In like 4 minutes, the length of a song, you could.
I need a montage.
Yeah, check out Henry Rollins. I think he'd actually be better to whip your ass around. But yeah, Ice-T, he brings Pookie back and apparently, he pays for Pookie's dental work because Pookie has some nice white chompers.
Those teeth get so clean. I'm like, did they just brush them? Do they replace them all? How do you get rid of crack teeth?
Yeah, there's a propaganda movie. I think you guys both know Reefer Madness.
Yes, I was thinking very much about that.
Yes, I mean, where it goes so over the top and depicting the ills of the drug culture that it just becomes unintentional parody. And that certainly is what I'm feeling when we watch him go through AA meetings and get clean. And now he wants to take down Nino Brown. He is holding that man responsible for getting him hooked on crack. He was working for him when he got shot. And so now he wants to go undercover under the tutelage of Scotty. He is going to infiltrate the Carter and take down the whole thing.
This is where he informs Scotty and all them about how this Carter apartment complex is set up. And again, it's so crazy over the top, and I love it. It's like, you got to pull out your secret Blockbuster video card that they're going to scan. And then you got to walk through the courtyard that's just like all zombied out crack addicts. And then you got to go to the second floor and they're sticking your money through bank tube. And then they have a special room you can do your crack in. And of course, there's a mother with her daughter right there.
The Enterprise. Yeah, because you're going to beam up to Scotty.
Yes.
It is very sad. He does have a very good point. These guys have been doing this how long? And they know nothing about any of it? I mean, couldn't they have found a card by this point and gotten in and just seen a little bit of the locale? I mean, there's blueprints for this Carter somewhere, right?
Yeah, but I think they modified it.
I'm just wondering how you take over this place. I mean, earlier on, we saw an old man that used to live there. He's going to show up later. But how would the police not raided this place and busted it? How do you just kick people out and take over an entire apartment complex?
Well, the truth is, they don't want to help the crackheads because that's going to cost a lot of money to rehab all the crackheads. They want Nino. So going in and raiding the building isn't going to help them get Nino. It may help them get the naked people who are working with the crack. I don't understand why they are allowed to wear underwear but not tops. You can still hide crack in underwear.
Because you can't have frontal nudity in an R-rated film in the 90s.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see that much of Chris Rock. I mean, yeah, it's strange that he's in a white jumpsuit and everyone else is, yeah.
Yeah, he's fully dressed when he gets the job in the crack lab.
Yeah, it's so much about that seems inconsistent, but we're grateful for that because we don't want to see those choices. But
yeah, I don't need to see Chris's rocks.
No, but it's presumed that people do not care. And you see that with this old man character that comes in and out of the story and at one point is at the police station trying to tell people what it's like to live there. And the white cops are all like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and I get that with this in-movie logic that they're trying to make the point that, yeah, the whites are going to let the blacks just rot with their drugs and they're not going to worry about it. When you try to apply any kind of real-world logic to this film, though, it doesn't hold up.
Yeah, of course not. It's best to not try to go there and just appreciate what Chris Rock is doing, which is everything. I mean, it is so big and bug-eyed. And did he eat crack like a Tic Tac? At one point, he pops one.
No, he sneaks it out. He sticks it in his lip to sneak out. Ah. And then we see him at home with the crack pipe, and he finally does it.
I love that scene where he's, like, sitting there on the bed. He's got the crack pipe. He's got the torch. And then he throws it down. No.
Wearing an American flag shirt.
Yes.
Because we haven't hit that loud enough.
And then he does it again, and yeah.
Oh, it's so great when he's on crack at the lab and just doing a stand-up routine.
I really think the only thing that these undercover cops care about is the tech. We have this token Asian guy, Park, who's like, hey, I got a video camera belt, which would have been a really cool thing, particularly in 1991.
They didn't have that.
Yeah, no, that would have been a phenomenal thing.
They throw out a line that, oh, it could pick up sounds you can't even hear.
But then when Pookie is unmasked, it's just like a wire taped to his chest.
Yeah, he has a wire.
They did a really big job of protecting him.
Yeah, and that's when I'm laughing. I've said the line, Scotty, they're going to kill me. That line is funny. That line is so out of place in a dramatic cop film. That is Chris Rock. He might as well be talking about Toss Salad Man for as much as I'm laughing.
It's hard for comedians to be taken seriously, and this is a case in point where I'm sure we are not to be laughing when he is screaming he is about to be killed, but because it's Chris Rock, it's nothing but hilarious.
And his teeth went bad instantly again, too. It's like one rock, and man, all that dental work gone to hell.
But we do get an action scene here. Like, the cops finally raid the place, and we see, yeah, they're burning their computers. Chris Rock's already dead, right? There's a bomb strapped to him, but it looked like his throat was already cut.
I think so, but yet they say we're gonna save him, but I think, like, he's a corpse.
Yeah, it's confusing.
I think there might have been some debate about whether to keep him alive and shot, reshot, that kind of stuff, but yes, he is dead. If he's not dead, he's just about to be, and they're trying to stop themselves from blowing up as well.
Oh, this is so corny, yeah. Pull the blue cord. No, pull the yellow one now. Like, ugh.
Yeah, this is a really bad cop show. I mean,
yes, it is.
It really does look like something that would be canceled. The only thing that makes it interesting is because, yeah, they're talking about crack cocaine, which was something that was not being talked about in detail enough, and because you also have this thing going on with Leslie Snipes that's completely hypnotizing. While all this is going on, yeah, the stories are parallel, but they're not equal. What Ice-T is going through is what Wesley Snipes is going through, but you treat the Wesley Snipes stuff an entirely different way. When he's calling his minions before him in a Godfather-ish underlit room and challenging G-Money and saying, sit your $5 ass down before I make change, he is commanding all of this camp and taking it to a new level. And this is where G-Money starts to use. They could have made the choice that it was Nino Brown. He is accused of taking his eye off the building and partying with Uniqua, but he could just as easily be partying with Uniqua and a crackpot.
Here's the thing. We've been calling out a lot of Scarface stuff in this, but half reminds me of De Palma's Scarface, and half of this reminds me of De Palma's Untouchables. Arnie, you're calling out this cop team that it's like Lethal Weapon. No, I felt like it was more like it's all the outcasts, like the Untouchables were. The cop, you know, we get a new cop, and we get this Sean Connery that no one likes. And I do feel like Wesley Snipes is more like that Robert De Niro at times where, yeah, he's going to stay above all this crime. He wants to stay clean so no one can touch him. I think they even call out, like, at one point in this, oh, let's see if we can get him on tax evasion.
Yeah, which they did get Wesley Snipes on, but not sadly, the life imitating art.
And he did more than 1 year.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, after Pookie dies, I have to say a lot of the fun leaves the movie for me. Because they've lost the Carter. They burned it down. There's no longer the Bond layer. They lost Pookie, who was really my favorite character in this movie. Wesley's giving the best performance, but Pookie, he's the one I'm enjoying laughing with. And now the cops are getting yelled at for letting Pookie die. Like any cop cared about Pookie. They're pulled off the case. We get this dramatic scene, Judd Nelson and Ice-T. I just want to kill him. I'm already ahead of you. Like they're going to go assassin?
Yeah, they're going rogue. They're rogue cops, so it makes sense that they wouldn't listen to Sonny Spoon and just quit the case and let Nino Brown win.
Yeah, this film takes a weird shift. Like, in a gangster film, yeah, you're going to have some action scenes, some shootouts, but it's got a different beat than an action film. And I feel like this has been a gangster film up until this point. Now we're going to get a lot of scenes with cops rushing in a shootout, and then a little dramatic scene, and another more cops rushing in a shootout and for the rest of this film, and it's just not as engaging.
Well, it might not be as engaging, but I still am very much entertained. What they're doing is they're telling the story of Nino and Scotty in parallel, and in fact, bringing them together. It happens too late, but eventually Scotty, part of the deception is, I'm going to pose as a new drug supplier. Although I want to point out that wasn't the problem. The problem is that they lost the place that they distribute the drugs. I would presume they would still have the Peruvians to sell them the cocaine that they turn into crack. They just don't have a means to make it into vials of crack cocaine. But here's someone that is going to pose, Ice-T is Mr. Washington now, and he is going to sell them cocaine at 60% less than the Peruvians were. And because Frankie Knuckles, the Italian, says they're good guys, I don't know why you believe anything that they would say. They hate you, but that means that he's in, and we can finally bring Ice-T and Wesley Snipes together on the same screen.
And these are fun scenes. I honestly thought the movie might take an unanticipated direction. I thought Scotty might be seduced by the lifestyle that they're doing because he and Nino, they become close. He's the new G-Money. G-Money knows that, but they have this moment up on the roof where Nino talks about getting made with the gang, how he had to do some angel dust and go hit a random person, and it was Scotty's mom.
that's so bad. It's all related.
Yeah, it's hysterical, really, that they felt they had to go that melodramatic.
It is. I am laughing at this. Like, it's stupid, but I am laughing. I am entertained.
Oh, it's very funny. But of course, the reason why this duplicitous Mr. Washington, it should not work. All you got to do is make a phone call. Has anyone heard of Mr. Washington? No. At one point, Ice-T is standing outside the Harlem courthouse talking to cops. I'm like, someone clearly must see him be doing this. I would think that this ruse would be exposed. But what he does is he saves Nino Brown. This old man comes back at a certain point, and in an attempt to get him from stop buying the affection of the neighborhood kids, he pulls a gun, lectures him on committing genocide of his own people, and it is Ice-T that saves, G-Money failed. This guy would presumably have killed Nino Brown much earlier had it not been for this undercover cop. And so there's irony here. And should he have let him do it? Later, during the wedding massacre, he'll have a similar impulse of like, maybe I should just shoot Nino in the crossfire here.
That wedding scene is the one that really, it seems weird because so much of this movie has been indoors in controlled light, other than like the chase scenes. When we have this wedding, it's outdoors. The Italians show up and start shooting. Nino goes all human shield with the baby.
Yeah, grabs a little child.
Yeah, straight out of Dead Zone, right?
Except his cowardice doesn't seem to hurt him and his standing in the community. This actually, no one loses respect.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a payoff for that.
Yeah, I would think that many people might be, I guess no one was there anymore. The wedding parties had cleared out and there was just a little girl that was trying to get the cake topper. And yeah, for a brief moment, it looks like they might shoot her. And no, here comes Ice-T to save her. And rockabye, Keisha, you're gone. That hurt me.
Yes.
Human baby shield or no human baby shield, people still need their rock. But that's the scene that, honestly, this film feels unfocused in its second half to me. We've got the wedding scene. We've got Mario Van Peebles coming in, getting in fights with the cops. We've got the cops rooftop scene where I was a poor white trash kid. We're all the same.
No,
I don't think your mom did crack or was killed by Nino, but that would be really funny if both cops' moms were killed by Nino.
I don't think it surprises anyone that Judd Nelson doesn't pull this off. There are actors that could, and it certainly it would be wrong to presume that because of your skin color, you wouldn't be touched by a certain drug or a certain kind of experience, but Judd Nelson will always be that rebel from Breakfast Club. He just doesn't have any clout here.
It's not a black thing. It's not a white thing. It's a death thing.
Yes, it is. And that scene is dying coming out of his mouth.
I thought you were going to say it's a Judd thing. It's him. It is him. You could have put Andrew McCarthy in this role and it would be just as bad.
Here's the thing. I do not think that Mario Van Peebles is a good filmmaker in the most traditional sense. Like, I don't feel like he's making a masterpiece here, but I do think he knows how to keep people entertained. And he knows that he needs to keep the camera moving. And I'm just impressed, even in scenes that don't make sense or maybe are dull and not what we want to happen, we are always spinning around with aerial shots and clever ways of showing montage and time passing, using an a cappella group to show the housing complex go from happy to depraved. He has the tricks and the skill to tell this story. It really works.
He does not have the skill Spike Lee brought to do the right thing, but for what this film is, again, a blaxploitation film, yeah, he does a pretty decent job. I am entertained. Great shots of the cities. I loved all the camera work there.
I like the camera work, but I'm going to disagree that he has the storytelling skills to keep this movie together. The longer it goes, the more it feels like the wheels are falling off the cart.
Well, it's not very long, is the good thing. I mean, this movie is shorter than most movies that come out today. It used to be that two-hour movies were not the norm, and now I feel like because of high movie ticket prices, they want to give you more bang for the buck, and you get two and a half hours always. It was kind of refreshing to see something so fleet.
Yeah, it really depended on the film. I mean, I don't know that we ever had a Friday the 13th over 100 minutes. I don't know that we ever had a Star Trek under 120, but this is a short movie, and that's good because, yeah, it's kind of like Pookie. It started off really good, but it kind of started to lose its teeth when it started on the rock.
I will say this warehouse shootout, the moment where Ice-T is exposed for this incredibly ridiculous, maybe the most ludicrous coincidence. I don't know. There have been many here, including you killed my mother and I can't respond to that.
That's the worst. That one is the worst.
Yes.
I don't know. The fact that Kareem was there on the playground to see Pookie get shot, has seen Mr. Washington many times now.
He's got a very unique look, Ice-T. Like, you don't forget. And the whole time he's like, where have I seen this guy before? He's got the Rastafarian hat, the dread. Like, you know Ice-T when you see him.
But it's because he crouches down like he did when he was on the playground. He crouches down to open the suitcase, and we have cut back and flash and watch the guy's eyes open wider, and he goes, he's 5'0", and everyone just pulls out a gun and starts blasting. Nobody asks any questions. That's just like, all right, cool. That's all I really wanted to do anyway. And suddenly Wesley Snipes is hanging upside down from the rafters and slitting throats.
Yes! He's gone full! I don't know what he's doing. He's like Freddy or something all of a sudden. He's like changing costumes to pretend to be a dead cop to get people. It is crazy!
Yeah, is he having non-flashbacks? I really feel like, yeah, you just something PTSD has unleashed you. He even feels like he needs to kill a nameless cop, put on the uniform so that he can trick Park. It gets close enough to him to stab yes. him. Oh, so ridiculous.
And yet nobody of note really dies here.
Oh, come on, Park. He was with the team from the beginning.
Like I said, nobody of note really dies here. Have we mentioned Park this entire show?
Yeah, he got a mention when we said the belt buckle.
Yeah,
that's it.
He provided them with a video camera belt, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, this is now it's time for the tragedy. If you know Scarface or you just know how movies depict anti-heroes, they've got to fall. Nino must fall. And now they have been caught buying their new supply from an undercover cop. He's on the run. There's nothing he can do. And we just see him betraying everyone that he was toasting at the New Year's Eve party. I mean, suddenly, cancel that bitch. I'll buy a new one to Selena. And who doesn't love this dialogue? I mean, again, it is so outrageous. Almost every line is a gem. It is just so campy and fun. G-Money, he's got to go down. I'm thinking of Fredo's boat ride here, as we know it can only go one way. But you know what? Wesley's still selling it. I think that Alan Payne is a bad actor. I've seen him. Jason's Lyric, he got that out of this movie. And he did like a Vietnam black movie called Walking Dead. Nothing to do with zombies. He's really not going to continue on and make great performances on screen.
I remember him from Vampire in Brooklyn. He was the second lead.
I remember nothing from that movie, but I feel like in every scene, Wesley is just carrying people and doing it well. In a weird way, I do feel like he's feeling something when he has to kill his brother.
I got that. I did. I thought he might not, but G-Money has screwed up way too many times at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he bought from a cop and using cocaine himself and, yeah, made it all personal about Unica.
And brought in Pookie, too. I mean, he brought in Pookie, an informant, and then brought in the cop that Pookie was informing to. But I think Uniqua should have been a bigger part of it.
Yeah, with Snipes, I mean, my wife's been watching this with me, and I think she's more in your camp, Arnie. She's just like, oh, this is so corny. This is bad. The obvious messaging. But when, like, Snipes is, like, sitting there crying, she's like, oh, damn, those are real tears coming out of him. Like, she was impressed with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you don't normally see in a blaxploitation film or in a campy Reefer Madness kind of film as an actor working this hard to humanize. And it makes all the difference. If we didn't care about Nino Brown, there would be nothing to hold this movie. It would fall all apart. If, let's just say, Mario Van Peebles switched roles with Wesley Snipes, this would be a disaster. But Wesley Snipes is carrying me through the end of this movie and strangely having me believe his tragic fall, even when I have no sadness about watching a character like this go down.
And that's the one credit I really have to give Mario Van Peebles is Wesley Snipes didn't want the role. When they approached Wesley Snipes, he's like, yeah, I'll play Scotty. And Mario Van Peebles was like, no, you gotta be Nino. I had you in mind with Nino. Take Nino. And yeah, that worked out much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to imagine, yeah, anyone else playing this role, period.
Yeah, it's similar to what happened with Arnold in Terminator, where he's supposed to be the good guy, and they're like, nah, let's make you the villain, and that makes all the difference.
Yes. And so we get the redemption. Scotty's got to avenge his mother, and it gets him so excited, his dick is hard, that he gets a tip that Nino is watching Scarface again.
Again.
In an upstairs apartment, random building, and yeah, just throws him down the fire escape into a pile of trash and beats the crap out of him in front of cheering crowds.
Oh, well, Wesley gets most of the great lines in this film. Ice-T gets the mother of all the lines. I want to shoot you so bad my dick's hard. That is a bumper sticker waiting to be happened.
It's the only thing I remembered that he said in the movie. And yes, I was waiting for it. I was cheering for it. But it's not a victory. I mean, again, by taking the high road and not pulling the trigger and letting the law take care of things, this movie's going to be very cynical about that. Nino predicts that he'll be out in a week. And indeed, it looks like, yeah, their prosecuting attorney Hawkins is ready to cut a deal when they get him up on the stand.
Oh boy, there's a reason why most crime movies do not continue to the trial phase, and this is it.
Because they don't have Wesley Snipes to carry it?
Yeah, I know. The bastardization of the legal profession here is just, first of all, how fast is this case coming together? I think it's yes. All in a day. Everyone's wearing the same thing. So, like, they're literally going to prosecute this drug lord in a day, and all he's got to do is say, I did all of the things you're accusing me of, but he was the mastermind, and Kareem's going to go up.
By the way, might I just say, I love both lawyers' hair. The DA with that eraser head kid and play thing going on, and then the defense attorney with like the David Crosby ponytail thing.
Yeah, that was just happening in white culture. I just want to point out is like dudes were putting their long hair in ponytails around that time.
It was bad, especially when they didn't have any hair on top.
Even though this court scene is laughable, I think they're sincere about the point is that at the end of the day, the American justice system works for the rich. And so this guy will get off and there's nothing you can do about it. Hi, Mom. He's laughing to the media cameras. It's only because that old man wasn't properly screened. They did not have, I guess, x-ray machines at the doorways to the courthouse. He is able to get close with his gun and get the kill shot for the love of money.
I just want to ask what's going on with Ice-T during this whole scene, because I don't know if it's bad direction. I don't know if they didn't get the shots they needed. They're like, what B-roll footage? Because he just got this weird look on his face. I'm like, is he like, oh, I'm just going to let this old man shoot him because I wanted to shoot him, but I can't because I'm the law. I don't know what Ice-T is doing. He looks like he might be a little high during this scene.
I actually love Ice-T's performance there because it's so Mona Lisa. Like, you can read whatever you want into
whatever you want, yes.
We know what Judd Nelson is thinking. He is grinning. He's like, oh, funny, you know?
I got a paycheck again. I'm in a movie.
Yeah, I haven't done anything since I needlessly snuck into that room and stole those discs that didn't even come up in the trial.
No! Okay, thank you! We see him break in again, pull out our sci-fi safe cracker stuff, gets the disc. I'm like, okay, they're gonna get him on tax evasion, apparently. Never gets mentioned.
These two could have gone on and done a sequel together, right? I mean, they did patch it up. If this is a story of Lethal Weapon proportions, as you say, Arnie, they each saved each other's life. At one point, Judd Nelson was hanging off of a railing and Ice-T shot the stutterer guy off of him. And then Judd Nelson shot the stutterer guy before he shot Ice-T. I think that they have found a mutual respect bordering on friendship at the end of this film. And yeah, it seems like with Nino Brown dead, they can go off. And this intertitle at the end says there's so many other Nino Browns in every city in America. That's a lot of sequels.
Oh my God, that end title. I liked the end shot. Here's the thing is they do this Hitchcock Vertigo shot where you see Wesley's body at the bottom of a circular staircase and it's like zooming up.
It's the one De Palma shot, going back to Scarface.
They definitely were thinking about Untouchables.
We do cut to Judd Nelson smirking, and we cut to Ice-T's enigmatic. He's too cool to smile, you know? But him and Judd Nelson hanging out is not going to be as cool as him and Nino hanging out where there were women in the pool feeding them literal grapes. I mean...
Yeah, I agree. That is what I would ultimately say why we never got a sequel to New Jack City. Big hit. I know that they could have found... Judd Nelson would have found the time to do it. Ice-T would have found the time to do it.
Oh, Ice-T says he'll take any role he's offered. He just wants the money.
Yeah, I think that the problem is no one can conceive of a continuation of this story without what Wesley Snipes did. There is no movie. Any possibility of a sequel dies here in this final shot.
But did it die too soon? Jacob, Stewart, do you have a New Jack recommendation for the New Jack City? Jacob.
Yeah, I enjoyed this film. It's one that I kind of skipped when I was watching all those 90s inner city gangster, let's look at black culture and how do we heal ourselves and how do we address this. This is the one I skipped and I assumed it fit in there. It does, but it's a different type. Again, different than Spike Lee, different than Menace to Society. It's still enjoyable though because, yeah, it does have that blaxploitation feel. Wesley Snipes saves this film. He is just so fun to watch. And I do like the sincerity of the film. I don't roll my eyes at the messaging at the end. I do feel like this weird little gangster film, we're going to solve the crack epidemic, or this is going to make some headway and wake folks up. And I like that when it's sincere and it's not schmaltzy. It's because of this film is so campy, maybe a satire, like you say, Stuart. I was into it for most of the time. There are problems with it. A lot of the stuff with the cops isn't as good. Whenever Wesley Snipes isn't on screen, you are missing him. But yeah, this is a fun little film. I'll give it a recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, and I do think new audiences should discover it. I mean, yes, it's very dated. I'm not under the impression that crack is the problem that it was then. I think we moved on to other issues, meth, opioids, whatever it is. But I do think that even if that's not the drug of the moment, there is something great about seeing Wesley Snipes at the start of his career really give a commanding performance and elevating camp. A movie that you can easily laugh about. I mean, if Godfather was the Oscar bait and Scarface the Coke-fueled parody, this is like school children that saw all the movies and then staged a play for their fourth grade class. It is very juvenile. It is very amateurish in its aspirations. And yet, because of Snipes, I can take it seriously even as I laugh. And I would feel very bad about laughing at the crack epidemic. That wouldn't just sit right with me. I like the fact that I can be impressed with what it intends and its sincerity and its messaging, even as I acknowledge that, yeah, this movie is a hoot. You're going to have a good time. The haircuts, the music, all of it. High recommend.
There's no way I'm recommending this film on a green arrow.
Oh, come on!
No way. It's just...
Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
Are you serious?
This movie...
You like Bad Boys movies, but this is not recommendable?
Not at all.
Shame on you.
Not at all. The question is it a brown arrow? Is it so bad it's good? Because Wesley Snipes is fun to watch in this for the first half hour or so. It kind of gets old, his act. And the earnestness of the drug message is really just grating to me. And yeah, the trial at the end, that's when they're just message, 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 message. There's no fun. There's only message.
But shouldn't they message? I mean, wasn't it important to get that message out and not to just be silly and have a dumb cop TV show pilot?
Have you ever heard of the TV movie Desperate Lives?
No.
Don't think so.
It's what was coming to mind for me. You mentioned Reefer Madness. I was thinking about Desperate Lives, where Helen Hunt tries angel dust and goes screaming and throws herself out a plate glass window. And Helen Hunt killed herself because she did PCP one time and thought she could fly out a window. And that's what I was thinking about this, is, all right, this movie is not Green Arrow. And I don't think anybody who was not a teenager or older at the time is going to find much fun coming back and laughing at the fades and the various styles.
What are you talking about? Why wouldn't they? It's camp. You don't like camp. I think that's part of it, right?
I didn't like Batman 66 either.
Yeah, okay.
My thing is, I like camp in small doses. I like the Batman TV series. That's 20 minutes of camp. And then I go, I don't like camping. So I just, it's small doses. But my question is this a brown arrow or a red arrow?
It's a Nino Brown green arrow.
Yes.
It's a red arrow. I didn't like this. I really was checking the timer. This is one of the shortest movies we've reviewed in a long time. I was checking the timer. I'm like, oh my God, there's still a half hour. When they're in the trial, I'm like, thank God there's only 10 minutes left. But yes, there's still 10 minutes of this trial. It is poorly paced, well acted, stupid script. I think this should be New Jack buried and let's just watch Boys in the Hood instead.
Oh, come on. Boys in the Hood has none of these laughs.
No, but it's a better film.
I'm playing along. Yes, a very different film. It shouldn't really be compared other than, yes, it was part of a groundswell of black filmmakers coming into their own in the 90s. I think this deserves to be mentioned in the same breath, even though it may not be as respectable. It is still powerful in its own way, but to each their own.
I didn't like it then either. That's what I remember is I watched it and I was like, not as good as I wanted. Wesley was fun. And watching it this time, I mean, I don't hate it, but I don't like it. It's not a movie that I had enough enjoyment watching that I could tell other people, yeah, check this out. I'd say, no, I bet there's a clip reel of Wesley on YouTube that'll give you all you want. And then, yeah, definitely just, you know, Scotty, they're gonna kill me! You gotta watch that, but that's it.
Oh, come on. There's the workout montage where Chris Rock gets clean. So much.
I watched this movie twice in a row and I could do it right now. I had a great time. But that happens. It's not the first time I felt this way.
And vice versa.
Yeah. I wonder what you're going to think about the movie we're doing next, which is a listener choice. We do have a patron that has donated at the amount that they were able to select our September title. And it is one of the strangest films in Cameron Crowe's filmography. And Tom Cruise's, for that matter.
We Bought a Zoo.
Vanilla Sky. Tom Cruise.
Vanilla Sky.
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing why someone wants us to review that. Never seen it. I just know the notorious reveal at the end. Everyone knows that, I think.
I'm not sure which reveal you're talking about. It is a Spanish melodrama that was remade. It's actually a remake of a film called Open Your Eyes. And there are a lot of strange and unexpected twists in the film. It is a movie to process. I can imagine wanting to talk about it after you see it because it's really weird. We'll be covering it. Will it hold up? I haven't thought about it in the 17 years since I've seen it in theaters. We'll see.
Yes, so that will be the September patron show. And to you guys, our New Jack patrons, we have a New Jack poll. Because next month, Vanilla Sky, but October, what are we going to do then?
We want it to be a scary movie, and we want to have it tie in with our Silver Level, which is a witch-themed series. The Dario Argento Three Mothers is a trilogy of films about witches. I had multiple thoughts. You know, sometimes when we do the patron, we want it to be nostalgic. Oftentimes we're like, let's go back and look at a film that's 30 years old. Well, in this case, it could be Witches of Eastwick, a big popular film that had Cher, Susan Sarandon, Michelle Pfeiffer as a coven of witches facing off against the devil played by Jack Nicholson.
I remember that movie. I was very young when it came out. It was a very sexy film, and I haven't seen it since those pubescent years, but it was the movie that first introduced me to the word schlong, so it will always hold a place in my heart if that's what you vote for.
Groundbreaking.
I just never heard the term. It was strange. And then I heard it everywhere because, you know, confirmation bias. Now, the other pick of three, we often ridicule movies.
Mm-hmm.
So one movie that just absolutely looks abysmal is Vin Diesel in The Last Witch Hunter.
Yeah, that wig.
Oh, I've seen it. He gets his D&D on.
I did. I actually wanted to go to the movie theater. If MoviePass existed at the time that movie came out, I would have sat my ass in front of a big old screen and watched that film. The first Vin Diesel movie I'd seen in theaters that wasn't Fast and Furious. Definitely have curiosity about how bad that film is and why Nick Cage wasn't in it.
Yeah, it really does feel like Nick Cage. There used to be a Saturday Night Live skit of where an actor playing Nick Cage would just come out and be like, why am I not in this movie? And it was usually a Liam Neeson movie. That does seem like it could go for Vin Diesel's Witch Hunter.
But then, you know, sometimes we just like to do a really good movie that has no franchise appeal. There's not going to be sequels. It just is something that's a conversation piece that's got a lot about it that we want to talk through and explore. And I know I had a real curiosity about what I had just seen when I saw The Witch. It was a movie couple years ago, premiered at Sundance Film Festival, got a lot of fans for it, was called recently one of the scariest movies of the last 10 years. Let's debate that.
Yeah, if that wins, we could debate how scary it is, but it is one of my favorite films of 2016.
And I'm Be the Newbie, never seen it. So it's up to you guys. Do you want classic? Do you want campy? Or do you want serious horror? It's completely on you guys. We're going to be doing this for a few weeks. We're doing it through SurveyMonkey. We do ask for your email address because only you patrons are going to be allowed to vote in this poll. And so we're taking your email addresses, and if the email address doesn't match your patron address, that vote doesn't count. Only you patrons who are supporting our show month after month get to vote which one you get to hear. We thank you for your support, and we hope that you enjoy this poll, and if you do, let us know, and we may be able to do more things like this in the future.
We really do appreciate it so much, more than we can ever express in words, you know? Sometimes we get emails from people who tell us how much they enjoy the show, and they express it in ways that I wish I could express my gratitude to our patrons, who you guys, month after month, support us. Thank you so much. We couldn't do the show without you. And Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me, and until next time, see ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya.
Operation was a failure, man. We didn't arrest anyone, no one, man. Now we could still be out there fighting scum like Nino Brown. Except for two things, man. I gambled on you, and you gambled on a crackhead.
Yo, I'm sorry you lost your budget. But I lost a friend.
Scotty, let it go, man. Operation's over.
It ain't over. You didn't die for nothing.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign. And we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is big business. This is the American way.
Now playing relies on support from listeners like you to keep going. So thanks to you all.
Money talks! Bullshit runs the marathon.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
Brother, we gonna come off like the mob. You understand what I'm saying?
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
And what's your opinion? I'm gonna give you your opinion, okay?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
God, it held no good stand!
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Don't get mad, Tito. It's the law. Sucks, huh?
New Jack City!
I owned the soundtrack, and I had this rule, and I kind of still do, but someday I need to see Above the Rim is all I'm going to say about this rule. But if I owned a soundtrack, I needed to see the movie.
Okay.
I'm, what, 25 years behind on Above the Rim now? But
I own Judgment Night, and I'd never seen that movie.
Yeah, that was a better soundtrack than movie.
Yeah, but the movie's worth seeing.
Maybe.
If you want to see Dennis Leary in the Wesley Snipes role there.
Bill is sort of a cuddly TV star. He had a TV detective show, Sonny Spoon, I think was his claim to fame.
Wow, I don't know Sonny Spoon.
Well, where have you been?
I knew this actor from some stuff back then. But I didn't really...
Jaws the Revenge.
I hadn't seen that this came out.
Again, but where were you watching? Sonny Spoon? Jaws 4? What's wrong with you?
And I just can't croon like I want to sex you up for a plot summary.
That's what I really want. I don't want any rapping. I want you to Keith Sweat this. I want you to take
it
to bed. I want to
jack you up.
Ooh.
Oh, no, I don't.
Never mind.
Nino has a plan to run out the other dealers and take over the Carlton apartment complex, making the residents his crackhead customers and manufacturing the product.
Carter.
Carter?
Right?
Right. Carlton is...
Carlton Fresh Prince?
That would be a much less interesting housing project.
I want to see Judd Nelson bust out the Carlton in this.
Nino... He really just, with some of those scenes in the neon lights, needed to pull his saxophone out from St. Elmo's Fire and just play the lonely sax man.
Cancel that bitch. I'll buy a new one to Selena.
It's good to see this again. So now I finally know where that guy in Jason Goes to Hell the Final Friday was yelling, cancel that bitch, Jason, cancel that bitch, got his line. I thought he made that one up. No, he was a New Jack fan.
Yeah, you're talking about an audience member that stood up and screamed at the screen.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Just to be clear, no one in the movie was doing that. No. That was your screening, one man.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
He really wanted bitches to be canceled, I suppose.
See ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya. You knew it had to be that line.
No, I mean, there's so many lines.
So many.
Ooh, cops for Jacob.
Yeah.
5-0!
Yeah, I need a New Jack Cops to get a New Jack Gangster. Yeah, I need a New Jack Cops to get a New Jack Gangster.
Gangster. Gangster.
New Jack. New Jack Cops. Yeah, I need a New Jack Gangsters. Yeah, I need a Gangsters. I need a New Jack. Yeah. New Jack. I need a New Jack Cops to get a New Jack Gangsta.
Gangsta.
New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack, New Jack Cops. New Jack Cops. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack Cops. New Jack, New Jack. New Jack Cops. Cops, cops, cops. Gangsters. 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 I need some cops. I need some cops. I need some. Yeah, I need a New Jack Gangsters. I need some New Jack Cops to get a New Jack Gangster. That's it, right? Okay, I'm out.